Ali's already been sitting here selling me on all of his knowledge, so I'm like, yes. So Ali Hussein, CTO and co-founder at Flux 7 Labs, has been designing scalable and distributed systems for the last decade. He acquired his passion for distributed systems while earning his MS at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, starting his career in hardware architecture and performance in ARM and Intel, exposing him to the architecture and technology of embedded devices and their networks. He brought his expertise to Flux 7, where he has worked on a variety of cloud and Internet of Things projects. Ali is passionate about learning and technology and ensures Flux 7 undertakes groundbreaking projects improving developer productivity. Let's welcome Ali.
So as of 15 minutes ago, good afternoon, everyone. Just a quick roundup. How many of you guys, what kind of profiles do you guys have? Are you guys mostly managerial, hands-on development? What kind of stuff do you guys actually do? So who over here is mostly managerial, higher level oversight, looking at stuff? And who does actual grunt work, development kind of activities? Okay. About 50-50. Okay, cool. That gives me a decent idea. And how many of you guys have actually used the cloud? Is that just about everyone, their companies invest in the cloud using it? Okay, cool, thanks. That gives me a good idea. So today I'm going to talk to you about some of the projects Flux 7 has done with Docker and Internet of Things, and share our learnings with you and give you an idea of the kinds of things you can take to your own company and bring there. So, as Stephanie just mentioned, I am the co-founder and CTO of Flux 7. We are an Austin-based startup. We provide solutions in the DevOps space and helping people optimize the developer workflows, make their developers more agile to reduce the time to market, reduce the costs. And we have several interesting clients over our short history. We have partnerships with AWS, with Docker. So who here has actually heard the term Docker before? Cool. Actually, that was higher than what I expected. So Docker is basically it's using Linux process isolation features to sort of give you something that looks like a virtual machine, but it isn't. So it looks like a virtual machine in that you get your own IP address, you can SSH into it, you get your own file system, you can install your own libraries that would be different from the other libraries on the system. You can map your ports however you want within what Docker calls a container, but it's not a different operating system that is running. It is the same operating system, the same kernel, and it's just using the built-in kernel features to provide all of those, make it look like a virtual machine. And the reason that is interesting is because you're no longer running a second kernel. You don't have the overhead of running multiple operating systems, the performance overhead, the memory overhead. All of those things go away. And we did do some performance studies on that. If you're interested, you can come back, talk to me after the talk, and I can share those with you. But in the end, things become a lot simpler because of that. And so how can it actually be used in some of the Internet of Things projects? Well, one of the projects that we had was for Horn and Bird. Horn and Bird is Australia's fifth largest solar panel installer. They came to us, they wanted an application for monitoring the customer, performance of their internet, of their solar panels. Basically, they installed the solar panels, and the only feedback that customers will ever get about what is actually happening is they'll sometimes if they're not working anymore, then people will get a high electricity bill, and then they'll call to make angry. Then they'll call you, be very angry, and you have to deal with frustrated customers. On the flip side, if they provide a monitoring application, they could do a lot more interesting things. They could first. Just the fact that you have a monitoring application. Does anyone here have solar panels in their home?
No, I've actually got three brothers in Toronto.
Okay, and do they actually have monitoring applications on their systems?
I don't think that they do.
Okay, so that we've also worked with other monitoring companies, and it really ends up being a huge gamification factor. A lot of the appeal of solar panels is being on the forefront of environmentalism, saving on electricity, and it gives customers more of a connection to the impact that they're actually making with the environment. Yes.
So I should point out that they've had these things.
Okay.
So it could be an old model. And number two, I think they've ever hit a period where because they connect into the grid, and mm-hmm. so they usually get a check back from the power company. So they've probably never hit a period where they're getting billed, so they're probably not paying attention.
Okay. Cool. A lot of the people, actually, even with people like those, that's a very interesting people to provide monitoring to. In that, so if something goes wrong, they can say, hey, this is going to cost me. I'm going to lose $100 because I'm not pulling my solar panel's connection is broken, and there's no way for me to tell other than is it when I look at the bill. And there's a gamification, and then there's the actual monetary value that it provides, that it actually gives you some input on are things working or not. So they wanted to create this application. Once they did that, they actually decided, hey, this is kind of useful technology. Maybe we should actually be selling it to other solar panel providers. And they started looking into that. So what they actually needed to do was take this single-tenant application for their own system and make it multi-tenant to be able to support multiple solar providers. And so where was the role of Docker in this? It was in providing the multi-tenancy. So this is what we want. We have we used to have a single provider. It accessed the infrastructure, sent the data forward. Now, that's no longer the case. Now we have multiple providers. We have to provide each of them with an infrastructure. Well, what happens when we do that? How would we normally do it? Well, as developers, this thing is, okay, let's just refactor the entire code, add a tenant ID to all of the database requests, go through every line of code, see where all of the requests are made, change it, and you are done. Except, no, you're not. I mean, let's just be honest here. That's a really good idea in theory, not so much in practice. It implies huge code changes. It's very tedious. It's very error prone. It's not something that you want to do. You want more guarantees. You want to just be able to provide the things that you're promising to your that you want to do. You don't want to make it into this long, drawn out project in which you're rewriting the entire application, because that is what this problem actually translates into. Well. What's another solution? Well, we have a set of servers. Why don't we just, get a new set of servers for each customer? And that's actually, that may actually work. So, and that's sort of how many of the old applications before the world of SaaS worked, in that each customer had you install the hardware separate from them, except that the software was installed on site. Well, this is, again, difference over here just ends up being how much it is going to cost to maintain that system. So there's high maintenance, there's high cost, there's more manpower required to maintain it, more things that you need to be monitoring, and each of the systems is going to see a very low utilization, so it's not efficient. So you guys were here all day for the talks about cloud, and really the whole argument behind the cloud is increasing that last thing, increasing your utilization to be more reflective of your current demand rather than setting yourself for the worst case scenarios. So this utilization ends up being very important in cost. Well, another thing you can do is, instead of using big machines, why don't you just start using lots of smaller machines? That would save you on the cost. Well, it would save you on the cost. It won't save you on the maintenance. But the other thing is it does degrade the user experience. That's just something that you cannot let happen at any point. So what did we do with Docker? Well, with Docker, we actually didn't need to create need new servers. The original servers, their utilization could handle the data coming in. You set up Docker so that you had multiple tenants, each of them supported on the existing servers. And you just ran everything and everyone's application in their own container. So it was the same as the ops solution in terms of coding, in that everyone was running in their own virtual machine, except that you didn't actually have the burden of extra virtual machines. So this provided them with a low cost, very quickly implemented solution, low cost all around, both from the development side, and the management side. So that is one of our projects dealing with the Internet of Things, in which we employed Docker. We used it. We used the abilities of Docker to actually lower the cost of implementing of completely changing the scope of the project to go from a single tenant to a multi-tenant application. Another very interesting use case that we saw for Docker. This was for cars.com. They are one of the nation's leading e-commerce website, and for that matter, the parent company of cars.com. It's an extremely convoluted thing. Cars.com is owned by Classified Ventures, who is an LLC owned by the big four or big five multimedia companies in the United States. So a very interesting pedigree that cars.com has. And so we did a project for cars.com. And that dealt with optimizing the developer workflow, making the developers more agile, more quicker, more responsive. Well, the problem that we actually had, the problem that they have was that they had this complicated setup for their application. They had five tiers for the application, the databases, the web servers, the API servers, the logging servers, they were forced to have their developers be online, and which actually ends up taking time, especially in the current world of the cloud. When we require the developers to always have an internet connection, it does end up being painful for the developers. Those 1 second delays, they quickly add up. Each of those 1 second delays, it's not just a 1 second delay. It's a mental context switch. You stop thinking about the problem at hand, the productivity of the developers ends up plummeting. Well, what did we do for them? So the project had multiple parts to it. One of it was that we took Docker and each of their application tiers in a different container. This way, they could run their app natively on the local box in a way that would reflect the performance on the actual system. We used Vagrant for working for synchronizing between or orchestrating between multiple virtual machines and multiple Docker containers in this case. And we used Chef to bootstrap a new container that we created. Are you guys familiar with Chef? So Chef is basically a soft tool for helping for automating the config management. So what it ended up being was, when they needed to create a new environment, all that you had to do, you had scripts for creating a new environment, everything. You want to install this, this, and this. Okay, you want to install Apache and Logstash. Okay, done. The scripts will handle all of that for you. So we orchestrated between multiple containers using Vagrant and actually set up the containers using Chef. So what did you get for doing that? Well, you have this one laptop, the regular developer laptops, I don't know, 2 gigabytes of RAM, whatever CPU you have. You had, the customer in this case had Mac OS X on for the developer laptops, and you had a VirtualBox VM. And in that VM, you were running all of the application tiers. So the 6 application tiers were just running locally. The application that the customers ran locally ended up reflecting what the what was on the what was the final machine that what was the final setup. So you had the web servers, the apps, API servers, the Redis layer for caching, and all of this was just running locally. And we were so most of the code, what we actually did was the code was shared between the local disk and the app server, which basically meant that you actually what the users ended up doing was you're typing out your code, you hit save, and then you refresh the screen and you see what the changes that are made are. Now, you can do that right now, but there is one catch. You can't do it while simulating if the app is going to be working in real, actually be working. You're going to be missing a lot of bugs. And the problem is that the longer it takes for the bugs to be found, the longer it will, the more chance that they will be more destructive, the longer it takes to fix them. So you really want to be able to do as much testing as possible. Your developer environment needs to be as reflective of a production system as possible. Which is what our goal was in this project. Well, what do you get for doing that? So the ops, they're happy. They only have to work for one environment. People aren't coming and complaining to them about how do I install this on my Mac OS X and having to deal with the various things that people may have running on their system. The developers, they need to develop for only one environment. Don't need to start putting in exceptions for various things. They don't need to create more configuration files for one configuration file for development. If in development, use localhost. Otherwise, use the database that is existing over there. You had the front-end HTML devs very quickly getting turned around, being more agile. And in the end, the bad advantage of the management to the business was, well, the developers were happy. People were developing faster. They were being more productive, faster time to market, happier employees, and processes like onboarding became a lot easier because all of it was okay. Just run this one command, and you'll be set for you'll be set with all of the environment in your local system. So, and why did we use Docker? Well, you had minimum performance overhead, because it's not actually using real virtual machines. Docker has very fast boot and shutdown time, so it looks you can just recreate, rerun all of your containers. You can do a reboot instead of taking 20 seconds a minute. It will take a few microseconds, less than a second, and then there were the niceties that comes with having Docker. Docker comes built in with a lot of software features that we're going to talk about in a bit. And then once you're actually running it locally, you can push it out, your container out into the cloud. So how do you actually use Docker? What are the commands that are provided? What are the kinds of things that you can do with Docker? Well. This is the set of basic commands. In Docker, you start off with a basic image that you're going to use. And Docker provides several images for most of the popular operating systems. You an Ubuntu image, a Red Hat image, and the idea is that you can use these images across platforms. They will come packed with the default libraries that come packed with whatever the actual, whatever the real operating system has, and you just work from there. So Docker pull is how you check out a pre-built image. You can also commit your own images to your repository, save accordingly. Once you have your image, you can run it. You can run a command on it, and so you can have a sequence of commands. Say, I want to install this package. I want to install this package, and you can. And so you use a Docker run command for that. You can also commit images. So Docker provides this IDS, very similar to source control. There, every time you make a change, run a command, the new state, you can commit that state, and not only are you able to commit it, Docker will also let you diff to containers. So all of a sudden, when you're working on, OK, this guy was working on, was doing this on, I left him for a week, told him to work on the project, and now it's working, but I don't know what are the changes he actually made. Docker has a simple diff command. I can diff two containers, figure out how the two are different, and I can know exactly what to check. There won't be this hocus pocus on, hey, I really think that this is all the changes that were made, but I'm not really sure. So I'm kind of scared to recreate it on my own from scratch. So I just start using something that I'm not really sure what it is. And they also let you build images from Docker files, which we're going to talk about in a second, and inspect images. Well, so similar to for automation, Docker actually comes with uses a Docker file, which lets you automatically create an image. It's a set of instructions: do this, do this, do this. And usually it ends up being fairly simple, because when you think about it, who here has actually written something with Chef or Puppet or Ansible, like any done any config management work? So if you look at that work, there's like lines and lines and lines of stuff, very hard to understand what's actually happening. With Docker, that usually doesn't happen, because each Docker container is just one part of the application. You don't have multiple things running on a single Docker container. So you have a bunch of very small Docker files. And what do those Docker files look like? Well, you first specify what your base image is. In this case, we set it to Ubuntu 12.04, mostly because this is an old Docker file. And then you just have a sequence of instructions that you want to run. You can set environment variables. And that command expose at is making your port. It's exposing your port 80, setting up mappings for mappings on it, so that setting up the remap on the native system for port 80. And finally, you have the commands to actually run the Apache process. And as I mentioned earlier, Docker is a way for using Linux intrinsics, which means you cannot run it on anything other than Linux. Well, you can actually run it in a virtual machine. Boot to Docker is an easy to run virtual machine. It will come in a VirtualBox virtual machine. That's a few very simple commands, and it will bring up a virtual machine with Docker preset and configured. And then you can start using it. A few simple commands to boot Docker in it, to set up the virtual machine up, to bring it up, and stop to pull it down. Another interesting thing to look at with Docker is AWS Elastic Beanstalk now supports Docker. And actually, for that matter, Docker support has become very popular over the last few months. Red Hat, Ubuntu supports Docker. Red Hat supports Docker. So it is, before there were some kernel intrinsics, which meant that most of the long-term kernels did not support it, but now almost everything is natively supporting Docker. And what is, are you guys familiar with Elastic Beanstalk? So Elastic Beanstalk is Amazon's PaaS, and it supports several platforms, Java, Python, Node.js. But it also adds on, it very recently added in support for Docker. So instead of actually being restricted to the AWS, to the PaaS and losing the control, you can just run the application that you you want to run. You give a Docker file to your container, to a Beanstalk, and it will set up the system the way you want to set it up. You can also use pre-built binary containers instead of running starting from scratch with Docker files. Other than that, since we started off talking about Docker on microcontrollers, one of the real issues with developing on microcontrollers is the developer workflow is absolutely horrendous. There are very bad tools. The local emulation is pretty bad. There is very bad support for the local emulation is bad and slow. There is very poor support for the tools for cross compiling are pretty bad. And but one of the advantages of Docker is that it is actually supported by ARM. So it is actually possible for you to run Docker, debug and run your program if it's written in something like Python. Just run it locally, create locally, and once you've done, once you've debugged the program locally, then you can push the container off to your device, and your device will be able to run the container directly. You have, obviously there's going to be issues with you're working on two different platforms, but it does remove some of the variables, especially as far as dealing with libraries and kernel versions go. So this is a link for running Docker on Raspberry Pi. And some of the ideas that we had for doing more Internet of Things related work with Docker were, okay, why don't we share this developer and create a local developer environment for microcontrollers? And some things that we're already doing, well, have your backends powered by Docker to use to have faster workflows. So since all of you guys were tired, I actually did make it quick. You're welcome. Do you guys have any questions? Cool. Well, thank you very much. Enjoy the rest of the day.